hope to every school child. The Marquis de Lafayette, Nathan Hale, Benedict Arnold, Mad Anthony Wayne, John Paul Jones, Light Horse Harry Lee. While I never knowingly alter any direct quote or change the wording of any written document, the spoken language of the time presents a challenge to the modern ear. Though speech is certainly less formal than what was written, as is true today, there is to our ears a stilted and sometimes poetic quality to their language. While I am careful to remain true to the era, the dialogue must still be understandable to the modern reader. I have thus attempted to tread a fine line between the old and the new, avoiding at all costs any anachronistic words or phrases. I have also purposely avoided the use of foreign accents. The English characters in this story certainly spoke with very proper British accents. Those French and German characters who spoke English at all naturally spoke with accents appropriate to their native tongues. For me to write this dialogue with every inflection, "Ja, I am coming, General Washington," would have been a needless interruption of the flow of the story and a distraction to the reader. I am aware of the accents. I am asking you to be as well. For this I hope I am forgiven. As you move through the events of this extraordinary time, you may be surprised by the primitive nature of the war. There were no railroads, no telegraphs, no West Point training. The weapons were smoothbore cannon and flintlocks, to which words like accuracy and reliability simply don't apply. The most useful weapon was the bayonet, and for much of the war the Americans didn't have them. It often surprises people how few soldiers actually fought in the most critical battles. Very often, 3,000 men was considered an army. By contrast, in 1863, the two armies at Gettysburg totaled close to 200,000 troops. The American Revolution was in many ways our first civil war, and eventually became the first true world war. But regardless of the scope and the numbers, it was a war fought by individuals, whose sacrifice and dedication secured the existence of this nation. It is regrettably easy for us to take for granted the freedoms we live under without considering who paid the price to secure them. That is only one reason among many that these extraordinary people must be remembered. That is, after all, the purpose of this story. Jeff Scherer, June 2002. Introduction. At the end of the French and Indian War in 1763, the victorious British government is nearly bankrupt from the costs of the war. Beginning in 1765 with the Stamp Act, the young King George III begins to enact a series of taxes, feeling that the American colonists who have benefited from the protection of the British army should show their appreciation by paying the cost. As these taxes are enacted by the British Parliament, the response in America is not what the king expects. For nearly a century, the American colonies have been allowed to manage most of their own affairs, and each has its own colonial legislature. The king's policies begin to intrude upon the fragile autonomy of the colonies, and the protests grow. Hiding from the harsh eye of British law, a secretive group of men organize to protest the policies of King George. They call themselves the Sons of Liberty. They are led by Samuel Adams, a man with a talent for propaganda, who recognizes that the true power in the colonies lies in the hands of the people. The only means of tapping that power is by appealing to emotion. In 1770, what begins as the mean-spirited taunting of a British sentry grows into a violent mob, which escalates further into a panicked response from British troops, who kill 5 civilians. As tragic as the event itself is not as significant as how it is used. The Sons of Liberty label the tragedy the Boston Massacre, and for the first time, newspapers become an effective tool of protest. With relentless energy and a considerable skill at manipulation of facts, Adams raises the awareness of the people of Boston to what he describes as outright oppression by the British. The protests continue, escalate, and in 1773, in a hard slap at British authority, 3 shiploads of British tea are tossed into Boston Harbor. Throughout this entire process, King George and his government are utterly baffled by the outcries against what they still believe are reasonable demands. Though they occasionally bend to the protests, the king will never concede the last word, and he views the upstart colonists with increasing hostility.